Yo, what is happening, everyone? This is another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Kyle Draper in the building with H. Rod Blakely.
Wow.
Dude, I normally
saving the
hype
best
you.
For laugh. I get it. Rich. I understand that. Saving the best for laugh.
I usually hype you up, man. So today I was like, you know what?
Drake, you're going to hype yourself
building.
Up.
Yeah.
Don't hurt your shoulder, pat yourself on the back, young fella. That's
hey,
all I'm saying.
We got a good show coming up here on the Celtics Talk Podcast. Hey, Sherrod and Evan Turner chatted
up. My God.
I don't even know what y'all talk about.
Listen,
what are you guys talking about?
We talked about anything and everything. But, of course, you know, the one thing that I certainly wanted to get him to talk about is the money. The $70 million. Evan's going to break down who he spoke with when he first found out he was going to get that kind of coin. And just his thoughts on having a whole lot of money.
I miss E.T. around here in Boston. One of the best interviews inside the locker room, no
Absolutely.
Doubt. We'll also talk about Isaiah Thomas. Did he get snubbed not being named an all-star starter? I'm going to weigh in on that.
Oh,
you, hey, you know what I'm going to say, big fella.
Oh,
I'm going to come with
goodness.
The heat on that one. DeMar DeRozan, Kyrie Irving beating him out for the East All-Stars. We'll also talk about that. And we'll have a whole lot more, of course, on the Celtics Talk Podcast. But first, Sherrod, let's dive into your interview with Evan Turner.
And now on the Celtics Talk Podcast, we have our good friend, Evan Turner. Evan, welcome to the podcast again, my friend.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Let's just jump right into it. How are things for you in Portland? I mean, obviously it's a different system, different players and that. How has the adjustment been for you so far?
It's been good. I mean, I was trying to find my footing once I first got there. But, I mean, as of late, it's been pretty good in regards to finding the flow of things and also, you know, just learning the playbook, learning, you know, building some camaraderie with my teammates and, you know, just adjusting to, you know, to a different system. So it's been pretty good as of late. And I think I've been playing pretty well. And you know, I think we're still trying to find a stride as a unit and as a team to run off some games.
And the one thing, and when I've seen you guys play, and it's hard for me to look at you on the floor with them and not think about the role that you had here in Boston. The one thing that jumps out is when you're playing with a guy like Dame and you're playing with Lillard, those guys are very good when they have the ball in their hands. And you are also very good when you have the ball in your hands. How has that part of the game been for you as for that adjustment? Because you don't have the ball in your hands as much as you did here in Boston.
You know, I adapted to it because at the end of the day, it's my 7th year in the league now, so it's not it's shocking. I understand what NBA is. I understand they're such a valuable part of the organization and the franchise. So I comprehend the pecking order, and I'm not bullish. I understand, you know, you got to get in where you fit in. And my biggest thing is just, you know, coming in and trying to do the best I can and compliment them the best way I can, you know. So I don't really look at it as much as, you know, one might do to, you know, how I played last year. But, you know, we myself and Dane and, you know, CJ, we work in different, you know, different aspects of games and make adjustments on who's going to handle the ball here or what plays are going to work for this and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely been a little different from last year. But at the same time, you know, we're still trying to make it work and it's been getting better and better each week.
Now, the one thing that I do miss about having you in the locker room is that Evan Turner was the truth teller. If you wanted the truth, you go to Evan and he's going to give it to you. Now this offseason when teams were, you know, you were talking to teams about, you know, who you were going to sign with and all that kind of stuff, and you got that offer from Portland. Real talk, Evan, were you shocked that kind of coin was on the table?
I kind of was due to the simple fact that, like, I knew, like, I was ready to make at least 15 a year,
right.
But you know when you hear it, you know, it's one thing of projecting, having something projected. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm still relatively, you know, I'm a human as well as anybody else. So when I'm hearing, like, you know, what I got offered just to play basketball for 4 years, I was like taken back from it. You know what I'm saying?
What was the first thing you did when you saw that offer?
I called my mom. I called my mom, actually, and I told her. And I said, hey, I'm probably going to sign here for, you know, 70. And she was like, 17? I'm like, no, 70. She's like, And she's like, she's like 17. I'm like, no, like 70, like the number after 69. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like she ain't like comprehend, like, you know what I'm saying? The whole number is just like a baffle type of thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're all baffled by it. You know, just even signing a deal, you know, seeing how it'd be broken down and how much I make a year off it. This is kind of like, this is not, I can, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I still try to live in the moment and see, you know, how blessed I am. So that was crazy to even see it. Like, wow, this is crazy.
Right. And I just remember when you were here and, you know, you maybe have like a bad game and people say, oh, he's horrible. And then they forget that it wasn't like you were making max money.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm always going to, you know, one thing I've always gotten used to a certain extent, but I'm always going to get somewhat the lower end of the stick. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always going, you know, just from where I got picked and everything, I'm always going to get judged no matter what, you know what I'm saying? The hardest, or, you know, sometimes get blamed. You know, I cannot be involved inside of my name is going to pop up in it, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't really take, I don't really worry about that stuff too much. You know, in Boston, you know, when it came down to it, I ended up playing great, playing well, and when it came down to it, you know, they were so quickly to screen everything. Sometimes what I was doing wrong, but when I was doing great and everything like that, sometimes I felt like it didn't always be talked about, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
But, I mean, that's just the world, and it is what it is. And when you come down to it, it's just like, you're more so worried about, worried about what matters. And that's what your coach is thinking, what your teammates think, and it's top of the hand, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I know that, you know, your focus obviously is on doing whatever you can to help the Blazers, you know, continue to move up in the standings and all that. But do you keep in touch or do you follow the Celtics still?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, obviously West Coast time difference and everything is kind of crazy. But, you know, I still follow, you know, Celtics Instagram page and, you know, Twitter. And you know, I still talk to, you know, Kelly, you know, Jay. I still talk to my little teammates a decent amount. So, you know, I still root for them and everything. I'm happy for what they're doing. And, you know, they got the Christmas game. And, you know what I'm saying? They're second in the East, I think, or third in the East. Like, all that stuff is dope. And I'm happy for Coach. And, you know, I still get tagged from Boston fans and stuff in my social media. So, you know, obviously, I still get updates and stuff. I'm definitely happy for everything that they're doing and how they keep progressing, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What do you miss about Boston when you think back to your time here?
I really like the city. I thought it was a great sports city. I don't take it for granted, you know, playing on the Celtics jersey. That was dope, you know. There's certain, you know, franchises, and then there's, you know, there's organizations, there's teams, and you got franchises. And Celtics is like a franchise, you know. And the culture there. Yeah, we had a really tight knit team, you know, and I really miss that because, you know, NBA, that's hard to come by, you know. We all really genuinely wanted each other to do well, and it wasn't about one person, it was about the squad. And I didn't take that for granted. And that's not saying anything bad for my team now. It's just like we just had a special bond there.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, Ashley, about your team. Ashley, one of your teammates, Damian Lillard, he was, I guess he got caught in the crosshairs of that George Karl, you know, book touting thing. And I know Terry Stotts came out, you know, pretty strong, basically saying George needs to stay in his lane. But you being a guy that is around Dame a lot, obviously, as a teammate, take me through what he's like as a teammate.
No, I was just telling somebody a couple of days ago, I've never like been a part of an organization where a player, you know, positively and, you know, accepts his role as his thumb on the organization. You know, he's such a great representative for, you know, for the Trailblazers. And not only that, just for individuals. Dame's a person that stands for something, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what he preaches, whether it be in his rap music or things like that, that's exactly what you see. You know what I'm saying? He's not one of those dudes that walks around and, you know, lets you know he's on commercials or anything like that. He's a very humble guy. So when I heard that being said, I felt bad because it's like he's not one of those dudes that is a selfish person. He truly does care about the unit and care about everybody being successful and making sure his team is involved. Like, he truly does. It is an individual that really cares about all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was terrible to hear, you know, George Karl say, because I actually see this dude every day. And, you know, whenever, you know, we have a bad day or a bad practice or it seems like we don't have, you know, have any juice, he's the one trying to bring the juice. He's trying to be a leader. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't talk just to hear himself talk. He's an accountable individual, you know? So, I mean, in my personal opinion, that's, you know, that's as best as you can get from somebody that's, you know, and more from somebody that's in the spotlight. That's a legit dude right there. I can't say anything bad about.
And just kind of going back to the contract, not necessarily your contract, but just contracts in general. What is your take on just the money that's being put out there now? And when you look at the Celtics, you know, a couple of your teammates from last year, Avery Bradley, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, those guys, their day is going to come up soon. What do you think about just the amount of money that guys can earn in the NBA now?
I mean, obviously. Just in general, I mean, it's crazy for sure. But at the same time, I compare it to, you know, sometimes like FIFA soccer. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When you look over there with the soccer, everybody's making tons and tons of money, you know. And I think our popularity has picked up as a league and as a sport all around the world where, you know, sometimes when the stock is going to go up, you know what I'm saying? Just in something, that's a natural reaction to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we signed a great TV deal and then – salary cap is going up, and our league is as booming as ever, you know. And I always say, you know, I hope Steph or LeBron or you know, somebody signs the craziest deal on earth because, you know, those are some of the biggest, you know, those are some of the biggest athletes in the world right now. You know what I'm saying? At one point, LeBron was the biggest athlete in the world, and he was making $14 million a year. And, you know, Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo are making like 50 or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's your worth in your time. You know, right now we had a downtime where guys were only making $2 million or something like that. And I'm being sensitive towards it. So the fans are listening and stuff. I'm not being an asshole. No, I understand $2 million is a lot. You know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I do. Well, you know, the thing that I always come back to, E.T., is that, you know, when fans grumble about the contracts that players are getting, I always remind myself, somebody's cutting that check. And if they weren't cutting that check, they would be keeping that check. I'd much rather have the guys who are on the grind, on the ground level, put, you know, performing for the fans to get a nice chunk of that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, absolutely. When it comes down to it, you know, sometimes – The people are cutting check, and I'm definitely appreciative. I mean, you know, Paul Allen, he's an amazing owner and everything, but we got into a lockout where people, you know, when they didn't take the time to think about what it was and what we were battling for and things like that, somehow the media and everything was making the millionaires or the 100,000-naires look like bad guys and the billionaires look like the good guys. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when it comes down to it, it's just like we all have our different lanes. We all have, you know, been blessed in certain instances. And obviously this job is a great job where we can make great money. And I think sometimes, you know, what your body just put through mentally, emotionally, and how much you are, you know, it does take into consideration what you sacrifice and what you've done for free for so long. You know, just being, you know, growing up being on AAU circuits and missing tons of fun things in my childhood or in my youth or, you know what I'm saying, playing through pain or, you know, doing this and the other, all to fight for a dream that might not occur, you know what I'm saying? So it's definitely it's definitely a blessing. It's definitely a dream. And I mean, right now, you know, anytime you can play basketball, you know, work a few hours a day and get paid to do it, it's just not real life. It's unreal. And I'm just glad to be able to partake in it.
Yeah, you could work. Life could be so much worse for NBA players. That's for sure. That is for sure.
Yeah.
When you think about your time here in Boston, Evan, what would you like fans to remember Evan Turner by during his time when he was a Celtic?
I don't know. I just know it's the best time. You know, some of the best time of my life playing basketball, especially in the NBA. So, I mean, I had fun. I definitely didn't take for granted. You know, back there playing on the Celtics jersey, playing, you know, at the Garden. That was crazy. Sometimes we're looking up on Tuesday night or something. And, you know, we're playing the Sixers, and it's rocking in there, and it's just crazy. You know what I'm saying? It made you feel like a kid again, you know? Sometimes you go to places in the NBA, and it's just like, it feels like a job. That, you know, playing in Boston and things like that was unreal. And, I definitely appreciate every minute of it, and I worked hard to try my best night in and night out. And I'm forever, you know, grateful for the opportunity to tell you the truth.
Well, Evan, I'm certainly grateful for having a chance to cover you your time here, man. You were a good dude, man. We enjoyed having you and looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Evan Turner of the Portland Trailblazers. Evan, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
Man, thanks, bro. See you soon.
Okay, take care.
Shout out to our guy, E.T. Evan Turner. Always a great interview, dude. What stood out to you, man?
You know what? I think that the thing that stood out to me, a couple things. One, him talking about the money and just how, you know, the first person he wanted to really reach out and let him know he was getting that money was Mom. Mm, and Mom, she was so dumbfounded by the number. She didn't believe it at first. It's 70, Mom, not 17. 17? No, 70, the number after 6'9", 70. And also, you know, just the shout-out he gave to the city of Boston and how much he enjoyed his time here and just really talked about just the teamwork, the chemistry, being around the guys, some of whom he still keeps in contact with, guys like Jay Crowder, for example. I miss E.T. I miss that dude. I miss the what I call the straight no chaser approach to post game interviews.
Yeah.
He doesn't give you the necessarily the prepackaged cookie cutter response.
Right.
He keeps it 100 with you, and I've always appreciated that about him when he was in a visiting locker room and getting a chance to be around him. Appreciate it even more.
Yeah, and he's playing a little bit better in Portland now. Started off struggling a little bit. Do you think the Celtics miss him? Have they found that Evan Turner replacement?
Well, I think they have not found the Evan Turner replacement, but I think they found something a little bit better in Isaiah Thomas. And here's why. Evan Turner was at his best in the fourth quarter. I don't think it's just a coincidence that Evan is out of the equation. Yeah. Isaiah Thomas becomes just this absolute monster in the fourth quarter. Marcus Smart, I think, has done a decent job of filling some of that role that Evan Turner had. But the one thing I missed most about Evan was just down the stretch, the decision-making, whether it was his shot or a teammate shot, you never really know what he was going to do, but you knew he was going to do something more likely than not that was positive for the Celtics.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I think you mentioned Marcus Smart, some of that playmaking ability Smart has taken on, but Isaiah Thomas has really stepped up his game in the absence of Evan Turner. And speaking about IT, we got to get to the All-Star starters announced Thursday night. And IT was close, Sherrod. He was close, but the fan vote put DeMar DeRozan over the top.
Well, here's the thing that I think Celtics fans have to remember. If it wasn't for the new rules, he would have had no shot of even being in the conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
He would have been fourth, a distant fourth, to the top two spots going. So the fact that this system is in place, he at least had a fighting chance. But let's keep it real. You got beat out by a dude who's got a whole country that can support one team. You are one player, a very small player, who is on the come up that people love and respect. But they're – the numbers don't give you the greatest
shot of
being
that. If that was the case, Kyle Lowry would have been up there too. Let's not take anything away from DeMar DeRozan, Sherrod. DeMar is having a great season. He's right there with IT in points, more rebounds, and the Raptors are a better team record-wise. But, so I'm not hating on a DeMar DeRozan pick.
But this is what you are forgetting, Kyle Young Butterfly. DeMar DeRozan is having a great season.
Yes.
Isaiah Thomas is having a historically great season. Listen,
DeRozan
is putting up numbers that you're throwing out there with Vince Carter and Chris Bosh, that's one thing. But we're talking Larry Bird. We're talking Havlicek. Those are the guys that we're talking about in conversations with the season that Isaiah Thomas
is. No, I'm talking DeMar DeRozan versus Isaiah Thomas. If you look at the resumes, they aren't that far apart. It's not like Isaiah's blowing DeMar
away. It's a coin toss.
And you talk about fourth quarter scoring. Isaiah's doing great in the fourth quarter. But there's part of the reason is the Celtics play so many close games. They're not blowing anybody out. When's the last time you've seen Geno time at the TD Garden?
And that's Isaiah's fault?
No, I'm saying
all Isaiah can do is help them win.
Yeah, he's getting the opportunity to elevate his team in the fourth
quarter. But
at the
end of the season, if the Celtics are the third seed, are we going to question, well, you know, they won 56 games, but they only won, you know, 38 by 10. They only won 2 by 15 points or more. No, this is why when I voted for, as part of the media who did vote on this.
You going to say your vote?
I voted for Isaiah in the backcourt and Kyrie Irving. Those are my two guys in the backcourt. And the reason why I did not vote for DeRozan, and it was tough because I was torn between him and Isaiah for that last spot. Isaiah is having an historically great season. The kind of season where you're talking about more points in the fourth quarter than any player who has ever played on the green. Are you kidding me? We're talking about a guy that is doing something that has never been done for the most storied franchise in the league.
You're,
and he's doing that this season.
Nah, dude. You're trying to paint me into the corner of denigrating Isaiah and downplaying Isaiah's accomplishments.
I'm trying to say
DeRozan's accomplishments are just as good. 30 point or more games this season. That's impressive.
It
and
is impressive.
They're winning.
They are winning. But again, when you're looking at his season and you're looking at Isaiah's season and you're looking at the grand scheme of things, why are we talking about them? What are they doing that makes us move the needle in terms of the conversation
Isaiah.
More? Isaiah, we're
right.
talking about him as one of the greatest single seasons by a Celtic. DeRozan, one of the greatest single seasons by a Raptor.
I wish
great.
We had
you
video
are,
on this
are,
podcast.
Great. You're up there with Chris
so
Bosh.
Angrily right
you're
now.
Up there with Chris Bosh. You're up there with Vince Carter. Ooh, nice.
No,
way to go.
No, you're
Larry
up there
Bird, no big
with,
deal.
With Cleveland.
Havlicek, no big deal. Come
you're
on.
Up there with Cleveland in the Eastern Conference.
You're
standing.
Not really up there with
but,
Cleveland. Cleveland is toying with the East. Let's keep it real,
no,
Drake.
But I'm
you know that
this.
And I know
I'm
it.
I'm saying this.
Yes.
Three guys deserved it.
Yes.
Three guys
now that we can co-sign on. I will
DeRozan,
yes.
Irving,
yes.
and IT.
That we can co-sign
so
on.
So whoever you left out, there was going to be a gripe.
Right.
And a legitimate one.
But this is the thing. It's always a little guy that gets screwed. And almost every time it's, we've got three spots. We can only take
man,
two.
Dude.
Who are we going to leave out? Eeny, meeny, miny, little
guy. Why
are you
getting me hype over DeMar DeRozan, man?
And I love I absolutely love DeRozan's game. I mean, I love the fact that this guy can get buckets, and he doesn't need to go to the cup. He doesn't need to stand behind a
three-point line. Yep.
He finds that. He has figured out what I think. I can't believe more NBA players don't realize. There's a ton of real estate on the floor that they're just looking at like, nah, I'm going to go to the city down on the rim. No, I'm going to live out in the sticks.
Nope.
How about going in the suburbs, in the middle?
That's where DeMar is.
He lives in the suburbs, and I respect that.
Because then he can get to the city when he needs
exactly.
to. Or
exactly.
Get, you know,
but Isaiah should have been an all-star instead of him.
All right.
Leave it at
I
that.
Think Isaiah is going to obviously
oh,
use that as motivation, though, too.
And he should.
I mean,
he
uses
should.
Every little slight
as
motivation.
I'm kicking myself for not taking him in my fantasy league this year. I went back and forth on that.
Nobody talking about fantasy, bro. I ain't trying to.
Well, if you want to keep it, if you want to do a reality, reality is Isaiah is having a historically great season, and DeMar is having a very good all-star worthy season.
Right, and like you said, he'll be there no matter
what.
And that's
the great thing about the argument about the three guards. We knew all three are going to be there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of who's going to be starting, who's coming off the bench.
All right, Isaiah Thomas, he'll be an all-star. Brad Stevens, might he be there also?
Oh, Lord.
The Celtics take care of some business. Brad Stevens could be the coach.
I love
of the
when
Eastern
Brad is
Conference
asked about
squad.
That, and it's like he's trying to do right by the fans and say, yeah, it'd be great to be there, but I really don't want to be
right.
there. I just want to have a record. Can I get the second best
right,
record
right,
and not
right.
go to the game?
Yeah, all right. Scal had a chance to sit down with Brad Stevens one-on-one. They talked about all things, of course, Celtics, but they also talked about the coaching fraternity in the city of Boston.
So the other night you went to Patriots game with your dad and your son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
fantastic. Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because
why
they were playing in
no,
the
No, but
playoffs.
Why was it fantastic? I mean like
No, it was cold, but you know, we got a chance. My dad played college football, so I never played, but my son is wanting to go to a Patriots game, hadn't been yet, so we were fortunate enough to get tickets from a friend of ours, and we went and we sat and we enjoyed it. And I was just telling you, like, and I even mentioned this on the radio today, we are amazed at Boston sports connection to 80s music.
It's awesome.
And every song, like, I'm sitting up there singing, and Brady's looking at me like, what are you doing? What is this? And luckily, they spliced in a couple of modern songs,
yeah.
maybe two or three the whole time. But I think by the time you go to the Garden and you go to, you know, Gillette Stadium and then Red Sox games, get a good helping of older music. I like it.
Do you, when you watch football, do you think about it from a strategy standpoint at all?
Well, the first time that I've always thought about it from an individual instruction and development standpoint with some of the, you know, especially with some of the skilled positions, the quarterbacks, the attention to detail and their dropbacks, the receivers' runs and cuts, the defensive backs in a stance and being able to move either way on a dime, those type of things. But when I went to the practice earlier this year in New England, I probably saw more similarities than I had in the past. You know, not a ton, but certainly where you're trying to create misdirection.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
trying to, you know, create a thought of traffic with someone else in another area. And it's interesting because every single play, you know, is a draw up against the defense. So football is kind of fun in that regard.
When you... So, do you know Belichick?
A little bit.
Is that Is that like a certain kind of fraternity? Just, you know, I think this way. Maybe you don't, but Boston is different. The sports is different. The coaches, it's different to coach here than it is to coach any other place. You guys ever talk about that?
Yeah, we do a little bit. Although I will say this, when I was in Indianapolis, you know, I got a chance to spend time with Dungy and Caldwell when they were coaching, and then, you know, with the Pacers coaches, as it was O'Brien and Frank Vogel. And so there was a, you know, I think coaches all understand what coaches are going through. And Coach Belichick, his staff, Josh McDaniels, and people that I've gotten to know pretty well over there are great resources for me, mm-hmm. because I think that they have a great idea about running a championship organization every minute of every day. When I walked out of their practice earlier this year, I just walked out, you know, my head in my hands, because I was like, man, I feel inadequate as a coach. The tempo with which they operated, how much they got done, how little time they had to do it, just impressive.
Does it open your eyes to like what is capable from a basketball standpoint? For instance, you say, man, I thought I was running an efficient practice, but
And basketball is a little different because you have such a structured schedule in football. Uh-huh. If you play Sunday, usually you go, Monday's film, Tuesday's off, and you've got your preparation for the next team, and it's focused on the next team. You obviously have to do what you do well. But basketball, because of the 82 games, they come at you in a hurry. You can't quite prepare with the team that way. Now, as coaches, you try to prepare as much as you can for each game. But so that's a little bit different in that regard. But I was talking more about it's only about the Patriots doing really well. And you can tell when you walk in that building, everybody's on the same page with regard, this is what we need to do today to have a chance to win tomorrow.
Do you think it would be difficult to coach 53 guys and have the same relationship you have like with basketball?
Yeah, I think that would be tough, but I think that that's part of the reason why they have such big staffs. I think that you have to have a great deal of faith in your staff. You have to be willing and able to delegate. You can't do it all, but, you know, just being around that facility, you can tell they've got a great staff.
You think they win it?
I hope so. I'm not going to put that on them. I'm not in the prediction business. But I know this, they're going to prepare better, and they're going to be ready to go every time they take the field. I hope so.
You think Brady's the greatest quarterback or greatest football player of all time?
I don't know enough about football to make that call. And you've got to also remember, I was in Indianapolis for 14 years.
That's a good point.
And I also have gotten to know the other guy that remains nameless right around here pretty well. But I think at the end of the day, it's clear why that level of football player in the discussion, whether it's Brady or Manning or other people that you would throw in there for the greats, they operate at an incredibly focused level. And for Brady to keep doing it now and to have an MVP season on top of being 39 years old, on top of the 4-game suspension, ridiculous. So I think certainly he's separated himself amongst a lot of his peers in that argument.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Scal and Brad Stevens, always entertaining. Thanks for throwing that up on the Celtics Talk podcast. I want to get back to Isaiah Thomas, though, Sherrod, because Danny Ainge mentioned it. Are they relying on him too much? We saw in that New York game, I was watching it, and I'm thinking, all right, come fourth quarter, it'll be Isaiah time. They'll get the W. He'll turn it on. It didn't happen. Do the Celtics rely on IT too much?
They look at the fourth quarter the same way you do. It's the fourth quarter. Isaiah's going to turn it on. We'll get the win. I think they do rely on him a little bit too much. When you look back at the Knicks game, they took 19 shots in the fourth quarter, and Isaiah took 9. Mm. And normally, you know, that makes you cringe a little bit. But I was more disturbed by the number of shots that they passed up, that guys had, that rather than just take the wide open three, they would pass it to Isaiah knowing that, you know, this is what he does. They need to find that balance between the two. They need to have some games where Isaiah only makes like 2 or 3 shots but has like 6-7 assists in the fourth.
Yeah, but, you know, watching that New York game in the fourth, Isaiah was 2 of 9 in that quarter, but every time he shot the ball, I thought it was going in.
Right. So did he. And so did the guys around him. But I think that's part of the problem. He's gotten into such a great rhythm of making those shots that guys just naturally expect him to go in, and they don't do the little things like, you know, I don't know, crash the boards in case it doesn't go in. Or if you're wide open, actually take the shot that they pay you millions of dollars to make.
Yeah, when Avery Bradley comes back, maybe that helps. Like, who's that shot maker for the Celtics? Evan Turner was that last year. Who's that other guy that can make shots in the fourth quarter?
I think you just hit the nail on the head with Avery Bradley. He's proven himself to be a guy that can be a big game deliverer, whether it's scoring the ball or whether it's defense. You know, I don't think it's just a coincidence that D. Rose went off for 30 points. Just so happened to be the same night Avery Bradley was not on the floor. I don't think that happens with Avery Bradley's on the floor. So I'm not worried about the Knicks loss, but I am a little bit concerned about them relying too much on Isaiah down the stretch and not having enough ball distribution among other guys who have shown this year that they can make shots.
Right. With that being said, Brad Stevens recently said that AB probably is going to miss a few more games, Sherrod.
That's
scary. If I'm a Celtics fan, anything Avery and injuries, I'm worried about. But then something that lingers on that's going to keep him out a few more games, I'm worried about.
Well, I'm worried about from the standpoint of this team needs to just really be whole and get into a nice rhythm and just keep playing like that. This is this is where they're going to be a little bit out of sync for a little bit, and then he comes back and this is going to be out of sync when he gets back. And hopefully he'll be back in time to where they'll have enough games where they can make a nice run, get a good feel for each other, and be ready for the playoffs, because ultimately that's what this comes down to. Can this team be whole come postseason?
Well, and when they are whole, we've seen the numbers and the results and how good they are. But good news for them is that they still got a few months to get to that point. And so my biggest thing is how you're playing in January isn't how you're always playing in April and May. And so for the Celtics, they still have some time to get that together.
Yeah, and they will. I mean, I'm not worried about this team. Now, I've seen enough of these guys in different roles to realize that they're going to do whatever they have to do to figure this out. My biggest concern for them really at this point is their defense. I think they have to figure out how to play better team defense. They've got a number of good individual defenders, but collectively there's some breakdowns. And Al Horford, you know, he kind of fell on the sword the other night saying, I got to be better defensively. And he's right, but he's not by himself.
Yeah.
This team as a group has to be better. Both in terms of protecting the rim and cutting down a dribble penetration.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Shout out to Evan Turner,
my dude,
for stopping by.
The $70 million man.
I give you
that
nuggets.
That's 7-0, not 6-9, ma.
Hey, anytime. We should make him sort of a regular. Like, this should not be the last time we talk to Evan Turner.
He is podcast emeritus.
Yeah.
Without question. Anytime E.T. want to, and I told him this afterwards, anytime you want to, holler.
Let's do it. Let's make that happen, right? All right. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, CSNNE.com, all the apps as well. And also make sure you go out there and leave a review and a rating. A. Sherrod Blakely, Kyle Draper, we are out on the Celtic Talk Podcast.
See ya.